You have put a new song in my mouth. A song of praise. A sound that resonates, that all of heaven and earth may worship you. We tread the hills to meet with you, to see your majesty in all that surrounds us. For it speaks and displays the eternal God of ages, creator, author, victor. In love, you established an everlasting covenant with your people, and it's your love that captivates us. As children of the King, we rush in as waves unrestrained, overcome, overwhelmed, that the King crowned in glory and splendor would reach down to place a crown upon our heads. So we raise our banner, the banner we boldly stand under, the banner of Jesus Christ. From dusk to dawn, from age to age, your praise resounds in all the earth. Deliverer, Redeemer, ruler of an everlasting kingdom that cannot be shaken. We trust in the name of Christ Jesus, the only King, forever.
Welcome to Zion's Redemption Radio. This is Fundamentally Mormon. I'm your host, Mark Lichtenwalter. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. You can find this at blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon. And the text will also be posted on my Facebook wall at facebook.com/LAZURUS1977. You can also find the text and the audio to this radio program on iTunes at Fundamentally Mormon and in the different Facebook groups that I am an admin of. Some of those groups are LDS Last Days Prophecy and Gospel Discussions, LDS Gospel Mysteries, Latter-day Unity, and others. You can find the pages that I admin also on my Facebook wall. And if you enjoy this program, please friend request me or follow me and make me one of your close friends. We try to put out as many episodes as we can during the week. But I'm thankful for you to be here today. Let's get right into the reading. Today, we are going to be reading out of Ogden Kraut's books. You can find his books for free to read online at ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com.
And today is the 13th day of April 2021. We'll continue on with reading Holy Priesthood, Volume 4. We're in Chapter 5, and today we're going to talk about the Hindus and how India went from allowing polygamy, and they took that away because of population explosion, actually, and brought it down to monogamy and all the problems that actually has caused within that country. So I'll dedicate the program. We are going to be starting on page 36 and reading to page 43 today, if you want to read along. All right, I'll dedicate the program. Actually, well, I'll dedicate the program. My wife is on the line. But I won't pull that out on her. I didn't ask her before. So I'll dedicate the program. Our Father in heaven, we come before thee in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. We thank thee, Father, for the atonement that he has provided for us, that we may be washed clean of our sins and transgressions, that we may have thy spirit to be with us, that we may come back into thy presence. We love thee, Father, and we ask that we can be tools in thine hand to bring about Zion's redemption, to understand the fullness of the gospel, and to learn to live it. We thank thee for the technology to do these programs and to reach a worldwide audience. We thank thee, Father, for all of our many blessings, and we ask thee to watch over us and say these things in the name of Yeshua, our Messiah, even Jesus Christ. Amen. The Hindus, Polygamy to Monogamy, Chapter 5 of Holy Priesthood, Volume 4, pages 36. Changed polygamy to monogamy. Hinduism is the professed religion of over two-thirds of the people of India. It embraces the philosophies and moral teachings of the sacred works in the Vedas, which is four ancient sacred books of Hinduism consisting of psalms, chants, sacred formulas, etc., and contains some of the most beautiful and uplifting thoughts embraced by any religion. Webster's defines Hinduism as the religion and system of the Hindus developed from Brahmanism with elements from Buddhism, Jainism, etc., added. Webster's New World Dictionary, 1984, page 664. The history of this religion is difficult to trace. Even the authors of most of its sacred writings are unknown. Their teachings have attracted students from religions from all over the world and have had more impact on Christianity than Christianity has had on them. The morality of their teachings and they're diversified. Their faith and consciousness of knowledge. Marriages get thousands of years. However, that custom was changed about 40 years ago, providing an excellent opportunity to study the positive and negative effects of both monogamy and polygamy in the same culture with the same people. And I think it was changed because, well, population explosion, according to some of the people who listen to this program who live in India, like, they're not allowed to have more than one wife, but if they go over to Pakistan, then they can, which is right next door. But and I think it had something to do with the British rule, them coming in and basically taking things over, but I'm not exactly sure. Anyway, we'll continue to read. The right to live plural marriage in India has been replaced and enforced by the in 1955, the government of India established the Hindu marriage to abolish plural marriage in that study was made as a ratio of five brides for every four bridegrooms. Recognizing this problem, a Hindu by the name of Atul Krishna St. Paul marriage, quote, impositions of the rule of monogamy by means of the Hindu Marriage Act of 1955 on Hindus of India added fuel to the fire of various socio-economic problems of the Hindu community, because this imposition of the rule of monogamy on Hindus of India against the Hindu religion, the very religion by which they are identified, is not at all a true representation of the will of the community, end quote. Polygamy in the Hindu by Kundu, page 8. Atul then followed with comments and a chart showing the general trend of the surplus women in the country. But actually, these brides have been in much more excess compared to the bridegroom for the reasons arising out of the fundamental difference between a man and a woman already mentioned earlier. That is why, practically, we see that if a bridegroom, 40 years old, wants to marry a bride 20 years younger than him, he can definitely have a bride as his wife, because those brides, due to poverty, purpose of solving the problem of feeding, clothing, and lodging, even prefer to be a co-wife to prostitution. Bureau of Corrective Administration under Home Ministry is not at all sufficient to correct and prevent the poor and unfortunate woman from being prostitutes, or so depriving them of their natural desires to become mothers and of legitimate children. In fact, the percentage of bridegrooms and brides of Hindu Bengali community, according to those registered in, Pathayanadura in Calcutta. The Organization for Marriage Contracts are as follows. I don't know how to read these numbers, because like they don't come through when they put it down in the book. Like the graphs make sense. It's transferred over to the internet. It doesn't make sense to me, but I'll see if I can try to figure this out. Bridegroom, brides, and excess brides. So 36, 64, and 78. So there's 78 more. I'm not going to read these. If you want to look at the numbers, I've posted the text on Facebook, and it's at ogdenkraut.com. So I think that it's just showing that there's basically an excess number of women that haven't been able to get married because there isn't as many men. So I know people say, well, the birth rates of men to women, there's a little bit more men than there is women that are born. Yeah, but boys do stupid things and they get killed, and they, you know, go to war and get killed, and like
prison.
Yeah, prison. You know, they do a bunch of stupid things. So in the actuality, every single culture, there's going to be less men than there is going to be women. So there will always be an excess of women.
Also, men have more violent tendencies, and I don't know any woman who is, like, you know, aspiring to be married to an abusive person. So when you think about it, even if we were all born, you know, like, exactly the same amount of men and women, you have to look at, like, there is a number of percentage of women who have these same problems, but in almost every single case, when you're talking about, like, being aggressive, being imprisoned, being, you know, gone to war, like, all these things, you know, sure, there are some cases where women have that same thing. But if you look at the statistics, it is significantly less women who have those problems than there are men. Not saying that all women are, like, you know, more marriable or anything, because believe me, I know women that I'm like, no, not even close to being marriable. But, like, I'm just saying, like, and then there's, of course, like, heterosexuality, homosexuality, you know, like, different kinds of things that they've got going on now. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of factors, and when you look at it, it makes it harder for, I don't want to say normal, that sounds bad, but, like, you know, women who want to have a normal lifestyle, it makes it more difficult for them to achieve that dream or goal because of the way society has changed, you know, the way things are seen by everybody. So
when you have men that are good providers and good husbands and good fathers and good husbands, whatever, and you have a society that allows polygamy, and the wife is, like, feels good about bringing another helper, because it's actually a helpmeet, you know, the multiple women helping to raise children, you know, that's a big help, especially in these societies. Well, if the wife and the husband decide to bring on another wife, then that woman is being reassured by that wife that this man is actually not putting on a face, not being, like, just nice. You know, because, like, Kim knows about how nice people can be and how they can change over time and become complete monsters. And they were monsters all along. Like, do you want to talk about your experience a little bit and the experience of your friend who fell into the trap of your ex?
Oh, yeah. It's not my favorite subject, but... Everybody doesn't always put forth, you know, the honesty when they are trying to find somebody to be with for eternity, or, hi, Arius, that he doesn't want to talk about it either. yeah, so, I don't know, like, they start off completely different, and they portray themselves to be somebody that they're not, and you don't get to know the real them. Until, you know, later, after you're already, you know, living with them and...
Well, okay,
you know,
so...
You say, I do.
Yeah, so you got this guy that you used to be married to, and he turned into this monster, and we won't go into details because we don't want to make people cry, but basically you were able to escape him... because he went to jail,
yeah.
And so you
well,
got out of there.
The police and I was trying to leave, but because he caught me trying to leave, and I didn't want to get murdered, so I was like,
yeah.
I
so,
him
and he admitted to things.
Testimony. Yeah, by accident he did.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short, Kim gets the heck out of Dodge. He's like. Stuck in prison for, not prison, but jail for a while. They go to trial. There's a mistrial. He did get charged and sentenced, but then something happened and there was a mistrial. We don't want to go into the details of it. Anyway, so story short, he pleads the lesser charges because Kim doesn't want to have to go back through this grand jury and all this trauma of having to relive everything by telling it to all these strangers. So she gets out of there. He's placed on an ankle monitor. He befriends Kim's best friend up in upstate New York and convinces her that Kim is lying about all these things. And he's really sweet and really kind and does all the good things. And eventually
She says he's so convincing. And I'm like, okay. But then, eventually, he starts doing the same stuff, and it progresses into even worse things, because when he went to prison for doing the things that he did to me, he, instead of being rehabilitated and going to therapy and getting help for these issues that this man has, he learned from the inmates on how to have more control and be even worse. So then he controlled her even worse. And would do, well, I mean, you know, worse is so subjective. It's like, you know, from my point of view, I guess I'm like, that's worse, right? But that's how you always feel like, it's not that
it
bad.
It was worse, no.
Yeah.
It was, he was making her drink his urine and handcuffing her to the bed and making, she couldn't put clothes on and threatening her and putting guns in her mouth and...
Yeah, there was a lot of things that he only had done, like, precursors to me of what he even, you know, did to her was ridiculous. And so then afterwards when, okay, so he still had a lot of charges on him from me. He was on a GPS unit. He was supposed to follow his parole, and he wasn't allowed to do a bunch of things. Well, one night when, you know, this parole has been over 10 years now or whatever, one day or night or whatever, he was out doing something on parole he shouldn't have been doing. He got picked up by the police, and then they imprisoned him. And she was so far gone in this abuse, in this, what do you call it, Stockholm Syndrome and all this, the way that she was. When he went to jail, she was even afraid to do anything, even though he was in jail. And she would, like,
well,
answer his
nobody...
phone calls every time he called, and she would, like, throw up while she's on the phone with him, but he knew that she wasn't eating and that she wasn't gaining weight, and because he didn't want her to gain weight. And so she would,
okay,
like,
well,
puke while she's on the phone and, like, all this gross stuff, because the abuse is so far embedded in the brain that she was afraid still for her life while he was locked up. But then, you know, eventually, when she gets a little bit of help and a little bit of, like, brains about her, she cuts him off completely. And then he has prisoners who are former prisoners and cellmates of his stalking her and getting a hold of her and calling her, and even though she has a restraining order. I mean, like, everybody who says, why don't they just get away? Why don't they just do this? There, you have no idea how crazy these people are. Like, ridiculous, and how bad the abuse is and how bad it can get. Because you feel like when you're in the abuse and you are, like, in the situation, you're like, okay, at least I know what to expect. But when you're out of the situation and coming, especially when you're coming out of the situation, you have no idea to the extent of crazy that these men are, who will do like things you wouldn't even think of to get a hold of you, to kill you, to hurt you, to manipulate you. It's ridiculous. It's so gross. And so, yeah, she and I talk a lot now. She was talking with a therapist, but she had the same opinion I did. When she first got out, she was talking to the therapist. She said, I don't like going to a therapist. I don't want to talk to them about it. Not because I don't want to talk about it, but because the entire session, she sat in there for over an hour talking about things, and the therapist cried the entire time and kept saying how sorry she was. And I was like, oh, yeah, that would annoy me, too. She was like, it was really annoying. It was like the most annoying part of the whole thing. And so she was like, no, I don't want to go sit in there where I don't want somebody to feel sorry for me. She's like, I just need to get, you know, rid of this, you know, and be done with it. So, yeah, it was the whole thing, the abuse and the way that it goes, that when it's more than just physical, when it's mental, when it's all of the things, it's so hard to just, you know, be over it, get done with it, get out of the situation and not have to deal with it anymore. And even me, after being out, I don't even know how long it's been now, like, what, 12, 14 years, something like that. And as of February 2nd, it's been 12 years. So it's been crazy. And I still, and my husband knows
that.
I still explain everything to you, like, all the time. You're like, you don't have to explain.
11. It's got to be 11 years because Lydia is 12.
Okay, 11. Oh, that's right. Yep, 11 years. So, yeah, and she was just 14 months when I left. So, yeah, even now, you even know right now the way that I am. It's so embedded in you, the behaviors and the way that they try to form you to be, the things you do so you do not get in trouble, so that you do not get hurt, so you don't get, you know, killed or whatever. There are things that I still do right now that drive my husband nuts, because I'm always, like, explaining everything to death, why it is that I'm doing
well,
what I'm doing.
Well, she got, Kim got, she has, well, we both suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
So
I was diagnosed when I got out with complex post-traumatic stress disorder. That's what they told me.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, when we first got together because God told us to be married to each other. We were basic strangers.
Yeah.
And when we were driving down to from New York down to North Carolina to meet the rest of your family before we got married, we were on our I-95 going through New Jersey right across from Manhattan, and we were in, like, bad traffic, and there was no air conditioner in July, and she was freaking out because, like, I needed some water, and I just grabbed a jug of water and took care of myself, and, like, she was, like, having
PTSD issues.
He just answered me.
Kim.
Yay. Oh, yeah, sorry. The band, the instrument fixer, has just gotten a hold of me, and he wants me to call him when I'm headed over. So I'm going to call him in a little bit because I'm headed down there.
Okay, so you're going to go pick up the dog, drop off the flute, and go pick up the prescriptions?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Anyway, so you were talking about the, I was talking about, like, how you had PTSD pretty bad when we first got married.
Yeah, it's not as bad now. It just still lingers, you know, because that's what happens. So, girls, nope. So I've got all the girls with me. So anyways, it's hard even still, and people don't understand that. But these men are, you know, they act normal, like everything's normal with them, and then they, you know, he goes to jail, and then he's like, okay, I won't do that anymore. But, you know, that's not true. It just, they think that, I mean, everybody would like to think that maybe they thought they were going to be normal or something. It just doesn't happen. And so then you have these women who don't know, like, how are you going to know that? You know, I told her, I even, like, she knew. I was at her house. His current wife, well, actually, I don't know if the divorce went through yet, but she knew all of the things. I had told her about a lot of it when I was, like, there during the trial, you know, and that he had even admitted to one of the things that he did to me, and that's what he was caught. That's what
he accidentally, he's all, well, I didn't do that yesterday. That was, like, last week, and they're
that's
all like... So you had just admitted to it, to what you did, to the charges. But so how did they find, I'm just going to say her name, we won't say her last name. How did they find Katie after Bo got arrested because he went to this crazy party kegger thing that he was not supposed to be at? How did they find her?
So after his mother knew that he was in jail, his mother went over to their house, and his mother found the kids and her handcuffed in a room.
And there was, like, a bucket where they could go to the bathroom and
no
food. No,
there was a kid potty. There was a kid potty. And I don't actually, that was not the same time. I'm getting two of the things mixed up. Okay, so... there was one time that did happen. That was not when he got arrested. That was something else that happened. And so his mother went over there and found them. And mind you, his mother let them loose and let them out or whatever, but did not say anything to the police or anything at all. Like, okay, that's fine. Yeah, my son.
Well, even his mother was afraid of him.
Yeah, like, ridiculous. And then, so anyways, So I guess what happened was she was out shopping, doing the monthly shopping. So he would let us leave once a month. That's what he did with me and her. Let us leave once a month. Had to go shopping. You had to get exactly what he put on the list, and it had to be exactly the right brand. Even if the store did not have it, you would get your butt kicked if you got home with the wrong stuff, and it would have been terrible. And it didn't matter. There was, like, you know, $500 worth of groceries in one trip, and you would get in trouble if you didn't get exactly everything that was on there. So you better pray that everything that he wanted is at the store. So, and you couldn't take a long time, and you're not allowed...
Specific name brands.
Yes, specific name brands, and exactly the right amount, like ounces, and the however many he wanted. Like, for example, Tony's pepperoni pizza. Had to be Tony's, had to be pepperoni, had to be, that thing. One time they didn't have it. I knew he eat meat, but he would not eat vegetables, so I got pepperoni and sausage. When he saw that I got that, then all hell broke loose, and I had to pay for it. But in order for me to, like, redeem myself, I had to pick all of the frozen sausages off of the pizza and throw them away and let him know that, you know, it was fine.
And by
and
paying
sorry.
For it, and by paying for it, you're talking about severely being beaten.
Yeah, and choked, and, you know, he would grab a gun and point it at me and laugh at me and make me take my clothes off and, like, throw pins and stuff on the floor and, like, I don't know. It was always, like, some kind of weird mind game with him. So it,
torture,
you don't ever know exactly
sadistic.
What he's going to do. It's always weird. Like, whatever it is, it's always weird. So you don't ever know exactly what he's going to do, but there's always, like, something. And you have to pay for it. So you're always, like, on your toes because it's not always the same. It's whatever his weird mind makes up at the time. So anyway, so it was, like, very specific. And so that's what she was doing at the time. She was out trying to grocery shop. Not allowed to have her kids with her. Oh, sorry about that. She's not allowed to have her kids with her. I'm not allowed to have the kids with me. Can you push that button, please, Lydia?
Basically, he holds the kids hostage to make sure that you come home.
Yeah, and you weren't allowed to take your vehicle or the vehicle that's in your name because this one time he would not let put anything in her name, but he put it in my name, which is a mistake he made, so he corrected that when he got out of jail. Anyways, because he put the van in my name, not in his, and got me a GPS unit, like, the night before I left, and he didn't even know that I was leaving. So anyways, that's how God, I think God did a lot of stuff to help me get out when I started praying again about everything, then he, like, helped me out. Anyway, so she was out doing that stuff. He had the kids at home, and he was notified that there was a warrant out for his arrest or something. Like, he was notified. Or the police were there at the house. That's what happened. Because they were there to pick him up. And then he called her and said, you better, and, like, I know we don't swear on the program, but so literally what he said was, you better get your fat ass home now because the police are here to pick me up and your bastard kids are going to be sitting here by themselves.
Yeah,
so,
and he had his police scanners in the house so he could listen because he actually worked for the fire department. And
yeah. Well,
not only that,
he did not
he
work
was,
for the fire department with her. He wasn't allowed to because he had to plead guilty to a sex crime.
Well, I'm talking about when he was with you. But then also, they had to be very hush-hush about it the police had to be very hush-hush and call people on their cell phones and not use the radio to notify him because he was listening. And
that's what I had to do when I called 911. I had to tell them specifically, and I had to get, I talk so fast. I know a lot of the listeners agree with that statement. I talk so fast, but I was a lot worse when I was in the abuse. And when I got on the phone to talk, when I called 911, I specifically told them, probably in less than 30 seconds, I told them who I was, where I lived, and I needed somebody to be there right now because my ex, my husband just caught me trying to leave him and he's going to hurt me. And she was like, hold on, calm down. What? And like trying to understand me. And I said, I need a police officer here right now because he's going to hurt me. He just caught me leaving. And, she was like, okay, I understand that. I'm going to send somebody on the way. But, I had also told her, that I said he is an engineer for the fire department. He has a scanner. Do not let it go across the radio wave. So the next thing I heard right after I said that was she said, Officer something or other. I don't know what his name was at the time. Officer whatever, meet me on channel whatever, like channel 5. And then, and I was like, okay, phew, because you can hear it go across our scanners, but unless if he, like, goes onto that channel, which you're not allowed to, it's like, whatever, I wouldn't put it beside him, but he didn't anyways. And so I'm sure they were having a conversation about the whole thing then. But my sister was also fire department, and when she heard that, she actually did go to the channel, and she heard, because she was EMT, so she was different than what he was. So he was like an engineer for the fire department and a firefighter in general, and she was an EMT and a firefighter. Anyway, so she heard it go across the scanner of the address, and they didn't say, like, my name or anything. They said the address, and she got into her car, and she beat the police there, or tied him there, I should say. Like, she was, like, right there when he got there. So,
and this man was even...
Nobody knew what was going on, because I didn't tell anybody.
This man was going to church, too, right?
So my mom wanted to convert him, so she was trying to, and he read the Book of Mormon, which was super surprising to me, and he cried, and he said that he wanted to get baptized. He told the missionaries he wanted to get baptized, but, like, not even a couple days later, he was like, I don't want them ever coming to my house again, and he, like, freaked out and didn't want to do it then. I don't know, like, it was ridiculous, the change that was in him. He was, like, bipolar or something. I don't know.
Well,
he's
possessed by demonic.
But he's, like, yeah, possessed would be an excellent way to describe it. Psychopath is another word. Like, I know some people are like, well, you're a psychopath. But, like, he was literally one. Do you know what I mean? So there was that. Anyway, so, yeah, the police ended up coming in, and he had the front door bolted. And so they had to come through the side door. And when he heard the knock on the front door, when I knew that the police had pulled up out front, like, he had all of the house had blankets and things boarded up all over the windows, so he wouldn't let light into the house. And then he
well, that
to
keep
door,
you in the
so,
house because he boarded up windows
yeah.
and stuff too.
Yeah. So then you couldn't get into the front door because of the way he had it boarded up. So you had to go around to the side door, which is the only way you could get in or out. And that had a porch on it, so and it was a covered porch, so you could only, like, you had to, like, run up the side of, it was like a huge fire hazard, but whatever, that's how he did it. And so, anyways, the officer had to come around, and when the officer had pulled up, he was asking me who was on the phone, and I was like, you know who's on the phone. And he's like, no, I don't know who's on the phone. Is that the school on the phone? Who's on the phone? And I was like, no. And then I ended up hanging up the phone because he was, like, right in my face. Like, his body, so he's 6'3", so he's super tall, and I'm only 5'5", maybe if I'm in shoes. So I'm, like, really short. And he wasn't,
and
like,
by
well,
300, 400 pounds,
yeah, he's,
something
like 320 pounds. Yeah. So, yeah, he is a big boy, and he was right in my face, like, towering over me, and he was, you know, getting angry, like, you could see him, like, getting angry, right? So he's already mad, and he wants to know why I'm using the phone in the first place. Anyway, so I hung up, which I probably shouldn't have done, but because, you know, the lady on the phone, the 911 assistant, she was like, don't hang up the phone. Whatever you do, don't hang up the phone. And I was like, it's hard. I can't even explain it. Like, it's hard to even think when the abuse is the way that it was. It's just hard to even think. And so I was trying to, like, not make him more mad because I didn't want to get hit. And I was trying to keep him calm. And at the same time, I was thinking, well, somebody's going to be here. You know, somebody's on the way right now. So even if he does hurt me really bad, they could probably get me to the hospital before I die. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know that's a warped sense of, like, reality, but that's, like, what I was thinking. So I did hang up the phone, and then the officer ended up knocking, like, right after. So he was, like, face-to-face with me, like, over my face, and the officer knocked on the door, and he glared at me, and then he turned towards the door, and I was like, that's the police. And he was like, you fucking bitch. And then I'm sorry, like, I know the listeners don't want to hear it, but that's, like, what he said. And then he talked to the officer all nice and calm, like, he didn't know what was going on, and he was like, oh, you have to go around, the door's stuck, or whatever. And so the officer was like, open up. And he was like, the door's stuck, you have to go around. So then
and he's friends with all of these guys too.
Yeah, yeah.
He knows everyone in the town.
They all know who he is. Even the judge lived at the end of our road. Less than, it, like, if you walked out of my driveway, his house was, like, maybe 1,000 yards straight on. Like, right at the end of my road is where the judge was. The judge knew him and grew, like, he grew up knowing him. He was, you know, he was little, you know, little Bo. That's who they called him, little Bo. So, he, yeah, everybody knew him and was, like, really surprised. And I just was, like, mortified. I was like, I didn't want everybody to know that all this was going on. I didn't want him, anybody to know that what he was doing to me. I just wanted to leave and be done with the whole situation. And so that's what I tried to do. Anyway.
Oh, and he was like sticking guns in your mouth and
threatening
to kill you and and other worse things than that.
Yeah, so the whole thing was just like just it was scary and mortifying. Anyways, and that's not even bad. Like, what he did to her, I feel like, was so much worse. And so I told her about the things that he had done, and she was like, but he was so convincing. So, anyways, you know, there's records on these men who have been to jail, and they all say, well, except for they didn't do it or they were innocent and all this stuff, you know? But,
well, that, there was media coverage about it, too.
Yeah,
so everybody knew what was going on, and this is like a small town in upstate New York, so everybody knew what was going on, but somehow he was able to convince her.
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
it's
fine. I'll continue on with the reading after this one point. The only reason we're bringing any of this up is because if Kim was in a relationship with this man, she would have warned a potential wife that he wasn't. I mean, she probably would have been like, oh, yeah, he's great. But then whenever she had alone time with him or with her, she would warn this other individual to leave. And, like, with somebody like me that I'm not even close to anything like this other man was, she knows how good she has it compared to how it was. And she knows that I'm a good father and a good husband, a good provider, worker, and all of those things. And she knows, like, there's women that she met when she was in the domestic violence shelter that she was like, or she's like, you would be a really great wife, sister wife, and would be a really good husband if you're interested, you know, because she knows that some of these women who have been damaged by these men, they still want to have children, and they still want to have families, but they're terrified to be with men because of the things that happen to them in past situations. And so that's why I'm bringing it up, because, you know, you get these women like my mom. My dad was a good guy. And then when I was born, he started using drugs and started getting violent. And she was eventually able to escape him. And years go on. And about the time I'm 6, she starts dating this other guy. And he was perfect. He was nice. No problems at all. They get married. And slowly, the monster begins to reveal himself. And my mom was stuck in a situation with him. He had us overseas, so she couldn't just leave. And it's just really messed up. And so that happened, and we had to live with this abusive psychopath for 6 years. And she finally left him when he stabbed me with a steak knife because I wasn't
I wasn't holding my fork right. So I have been diagnosed with PTSD. And I don't know how Kim doesn't cry when she thinks about the things that happened to her, but I do. Anyway, my mom finally left this guy after he stabbed me, and he didn't get charged with anything. She covered it up, but over the period of a couple of months, she realized that she had to escape, and she sent me and my sister away, which was normal. She sent me away all the time, partly to protect me from what was going on, but also she knew that he was starting, I'm the oldest kid, and he would do this to the oldest kid because his father did it to him, and he was the oldest kid. And so, but she sent me and my sister away because my sister's the second oldest, and he started doing things to her as well. Physically abusive, mentally abusive, whatever. And anyway, she was able to escape this man. So then years go by again, and she meets this other guy who is a temple recommend holder who does all the right things and everything, and she marries him in the Salt Lake Temple, and the monster starts to reveal itself. And it wasn't the same kind of physical abuse, but it was really bad abusive stuff that was going on. And then she finally gets rid of that guy. And then a couple of years later, she meets this other guy. And this guy used to be in the Sundowners, a biker gang, like the Hells Angels, but a little different, but pretty much the same. You know, but he wasn't that bad anymore. But he was also abusive. And he was a nice guy. And then, like, it's just, in some respects, I think that polygamy might be a safer route for some of these women. But then you've got these other women that have Stockholm Syndrome within polygamy, and they're raised in an abusive culture. So maybe that's not, you know, always going to be the safe bet. But more often than not, it is a safe bet. Like the polygamists that we know, they have healthy relationships with their wives and their children. And if the family is open to receiving another wife, the potential sister wives have relationships with the already wives of the man. And there's relationships between the potential husband and the sister wives, you know, so that potential sister wife can know that, you know, this is a safe situation. So anyway, that's why I'm bringing all of this stuff up. And it's not something that we... It's not something that we like to talk about on the radio program, but we understand things from a different perspective because of the situations that we've been through. And it's hard to talk about anyway. Even all the things that happened to me were, I'll be 44 in June. These things happened to me 30-something years ago, and they still screw me up. And I don't like to think about things because it's really hard to deal with even now and hard to talk about even now for me. Kim is able to separate and she is affected by it, but it's I don't know. I'm just a more emotional person because of I don't even know why. Anyway, but that's the only reason we bring these things up the way that we bring them up. Okay, we're going to get on with the reading. According to the methods of sampling, the above data can be taken as the reflection of the middle class of the people or of any class of people of Hindu Bengali community of India, where the social environment is different from that of Western countries. It seems that due to the lack of scientific understanding of the society we live in, monogamy was imposed on the Hindu community of India against the directives of the Hindu religion, the religion by which they are identified. The India government, the same as in other countries, likes to control the affairs of religion and regulate how people live and believe, usually resulting in suppression and catastrophe. Atul was making an appeal that the time has come for us to review the administrative system of India so that the control of the parliament should be withdrawn from the institutions pertaining to all religions. He was asking them to find some solutions for excess young women. He wanted the law to be repealed so their culture could return to the natural flow and interest of the society. He continued, quote, therefore time has come for us to review the imposition of monogamy by Hindu Marriage Act of 1955 on the Hindu community of India because it is necessary for stopping the socioeconomic deterioration as well as for the advancement of the Hindu community of India. After the implementation of monogamy for Hindus, criminal offenses among women have increased. Suicides, mainly among the males, the normal breadwinners for Hindu families, illegitimate children have increased in number, unhappy families, and others through prostitution spread venereal diseases in Bombay, so much that Bombay is now one of the 10 cities in the world where the incidence of venereal diseases is highest. Venereal diseases in Calcutta also have grown tremendously high. Mental illness of people due to family feuds, sexual maladjustments, and marital disharmony have increased. Murders of housewives have increased. Some husbands have been killed by or at the conspiracy of their wives. Let's see here. That's the end of that quote. So we're on page 40 for those of you who are reading along, and we're 52% through with the reading for today. This, and we'll open up the phone lines if anybody wants to call. And there is a chat room available as well for anybody who wants to ask questions or make comments at blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon, and you can find the guest call-in number there as well on that blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon. So on page 40, this sounds very similar to a description of the American Christian system of monogamy. By judging a general practice by their fruits, monogamy has certainly failed miserably. Generally speaking, it does not work for the Christians nor the heathens. Atul hit the mark again when he declared, quote, and this is another quote from the same guy, if monogamy is to be imposed at all, it must be imposed only on contractual marriages, which are nothing but legal contracts between the bridegroom and the bride, spelling out the rights and obligations on everything. Conjunctional rights, shared marriage, presentation, shared housework, planned number of reproduction of children, custody of children, ownership of properties achieved by joint effort, the terms by conditions of divorce, and conditions of divorce, if any, but it should not have been imposed on marriage by customary rites according to the Hindu religion, end quote. Exactly.
If a couple wishes to have the state enter into their marriage with whatever desired stipulations they want to have a legalized contractual agreement, then it is the privilege of the state to do so. If, on the other hand, the couple desires to enter into a religious ceremony complying with the rules, regulations, and commandments of their sacred books and scriptures, then the state should have no right to interfere. And that's the same with our system, the way things are in our world. The state shouldn't have anything to do with marriages. Like, we shouldn't have had to go down and get a marriage license to have a religious ceremony to be sealed together as husband and wife. Such is a good example of separation between church and state. This report raises an interesting question. If the government imposes a law against a correct religious principle, how can it be legal? And see, they don't have a constitution in India, but we do. And it shouldn't be legal for them to impose these unconstitutional laws upon the people. But let's continue reading. The Hindus consider monogamous government-inspired laws as marriage arranged, negotiated, and settled by persons other than the bridegroom and the bride. And as such, the bridegroom and bride are married by misrepresentation, which may be a source of conflict after the marriage. Atul Kundu writes, quote, "It is clear that the imposition of the rule of monogamy on the Hindu community of India in 1955 was done without any systems analysis, or in other words, without studying the problem of the people, the problems of the people in India in totality." He then makes a comparison of India with America, quote, "Similarly, a single basic fault in the legal system of the Hindu community of India is sufficient to collapse the Hindu community of India slowly and gradually if that basic fault is not discontinued. Indian philosophy and culture are splendid and much more advanced than those of the West, but we, the Indians, have grown an inferiority complex in us looking at the advancement of the West in technology and blindly copying the rule of monogamy in 1955 for the Hindu people of India, forgetting our rich culture and philosophy," end quote. So, and the other thing that is a problem within the Mormon community is, okay, so you've got men, and men do things, and like there's less religious men than there are women. Women are just more prone to spiritual things, and not only do you have more men in prisons and dead by their own actions or by the actions of others, more so than women. So then you've got this ratio of women to men. And if you go into any singles ward in Utah, especially if they are adult wards that are 31 plus, people who are 31 years old or older, you're going to see a larger ratio of females to males. And just because there are males within the ward doesn't mean that those males are good. Many of them, if not all of them, never got married to begin with because they were not eligible, like they weren't good picks, right? Or they have had bad relationships where they've been divorced, you know, and maybe it was the fault of the wife, maybe it was the fault of the husband, maybe they just weren't compatible, but you already got this ratio of men to women that is the women being more in population than the men. 4-1, 5-1, 10-1 sometimes. It's ridiculous how many, and like it's just these singles wards are meat markets basically. And everybody knows it. You know, I spent a lot of time being single myself. I was married for 4 months back in 2006. And I ended that because my ex-wife was having
issues with me doing laundry, and I've talked about that on the program before. She was a control freak, and she wanted me to leave the house, and I wasn't going to leave just because she was mad at me for doing laundry. So she called the cops and falsely accused me of something, which later on they had to drop those charges because there was no evidence to it. And I just told her, you lie on me to get me kicked out of my own home. It's not going to happen. I'm not. That was like when she did that. That was my get out of this. Now I'm just not. I was not going to deal with that. And I told her that. And I guess she didn't believe me. But anyway, and so my ex-wife, she's still single. She wanted kids so bad, and she wanted a family so bad. But she couldn't overcome her family. I was never good enough for them. Crap behind my back all the time to her. See, I'm not college educated. I have been to college. I went to college after I was married to my ex. But, no, actually, I was going to college before I met her. Yeah, anyway, but I don't have a college degree. I have a degree in advanced diesel mechanics through a trade program. You know, and I was a truck driver, and I love being a truck driver, and there's nothing wrong with being a truck driver, but I wasn't good enough for her family. And now, who is her family? They are the royalty of Mormonism, the Hinckleys. And her great uncle is President Gordon B. Hinckley, and one of her ancestors is Alonzo Hinckley, who was also an apostle. You know, and they're high up in the church, and they're all, and this is during the time President Hinckley was actually alive. So they're like Mormon royalty. Anyway, but I was never good enough for them, ever. And so they were always talking crap behind my back about how I wasn't right for her, and trying to interfere with the marriage. And even before we got married, we were dating on and off for like 3 or 4 years. But they were always trying to interfere with our relationship. So, but she's still not married, my ex-wife. She's 40 years old. Still no children. Still living with roommates. Probably still going to school because she's a habitual student. she's got degrees and all kinds of stuff. And she started going to school or college when she was like 14, I think, because she's really smart. But dumb as a box of rocks because she's Asperger's. And so really smart, dumb as a box of rocks all at the same time, no common sense. But really sweet. I mean, one of the sweetest people I've ever known. But anyway, so but she's in the situation with these other women who can't get married, who can't find guys who, you know, and they've got to pick one guy. You know, and they can't pick a guy who's already married who would be a good husband and a good father to their children and a good provider who might already have a wife, you know. So, anyway, continuing on with the reading. Thus, monogamy has become a serious detriment on the Hindu culture, which has been that marriage should be a family matter rather than a government contract between a bridegroom and a bride. Furthermore, it is a religious law that the man should rule over the woman, not have equal authority in their marriage. Once again, according to Atul, two prime ministers of India or two presidents in the USA having equal authority would have been detrimental to the administration of the states, and in the same way, the husband and the wife having equal authority in the family are likely to be harmful to the smooth running progress of the family. In the USA, a country of monogamy, at least one-third of the total marriages are ending in divorce in a year, and it is likely to increase in the future. And this book was written a while ago, so it has increased. Excuse me. In Britain, another land of monogamy, divorce rate is now among the highest in the world. There is one divorce approximately for every two marriages, end quote. Christian Americans can and should learn a great deal from these heathen infidels. The result, and that's in quotes, the result or recent results of enforcing monogamy in India should show that it is destroying them and is doing the same thing here in America. If we fail to check that system, it will do, as Atoll said, collapse the community slowly and gradually if that basic fault is not discontinued, end quote. To summarize the philosophy of Atoll Kendu and the Hindu people, consider the following points. Number one, there is a nationwide problem because of the surplus of women. And that was the problem that they had in Australia, too. Like after wars, like World War II, all around the world, you've got a surplus of women because all of these men have been killed. And so these women that want families and want children can't have them because there's a ratio of like four women to one man. So one of those women gets lucky and she gets to marry a guy. Now, he might not be a good guy. He may have been like my wife's ex, really nice, but then the mask comes off. Or like these guys like my mom married, really nice, but then the monster comes out. Number two, the polygamy would allow more women to marry and would help them with their financial difficulties, providing needed food, clothing, and lodging. And like I talked about yesterday, this Joseph guy down in Big Water, Arizona, he would send his wives to college and they would support each other. And his wives actually were career professionals, but some of them actually helped raise the kids and take care of the house. And we have friends where, I know I'm not going to name drop or anything, but so we have a friend, and they live in the old sister wife house up in Lehigh. And one of his wife stays home and takes care of the kids. And she's a college-educated, highly educated woman, but she likes to stay home, take care of the kids, homeschool, take care of the house. His other wife has a job, and she is a nurse. Kim, are you still there? Anyway, but she's an educated woman, and he works for the government, you know, and so they bring plenty of money home to take care of the family, but he has one of his wives loves to stay home with the kids, and she homeschools them and takes care of the house and does all the things. And then the two other adults in the family, the husband and the other wife, they make the money for the family. So they're more financially secure. Now, if you have two adults working and one taking care of the kids, because this is their family, three individuals in this marriage relationship, and one of them loses the job, but the other one's still working, you know, and they can all help each other to be more financially stable. Number three, it would help solve the problem of so much prostitution and illegitimacy, because these women that have sexual desires that can't get married because the good men are taken and they're with the creepoids that should never be married to anyone, but they're with them. And they have a desire to be loved. And that's not prostitution, but that's illegitimacy. You know, so these women, they lower their standards because they're lonely and they want to be with somebody. But then the prostitution thing, I don't really quite understand that other than lack of education for these women, which I know is a big problem, but also the desire to want to be with somebody as well. I don't see how prostitution ties into that so much. I'm not seeing the connection there, but they're saying that there's a connection with this. Anyway, number four, the government would have to regulate and enforce one less law and would not be able to interfere in the practice of religion. Number five, it would avoid state contracts, which include many provisions that neither the bride nor the groom want. Number six, polygamy would help stop the social and economic deterioration that has been going on in the society. And so we can see the difference between when polygamy was allowed and then afterwards when it was outlawed, and see the social benefits on the society in real time over the period of, well, beginning, you know, polygamy when it was part of the community and it was normal, like for thousands of years, we can see how it was. And then when they put an end to it and enforced monogamy, we can see what happened afterwards. So the other problem is these women that are only allowed to have one husband or, well, one husband, these men who are only allowed to have one wife, if something happens and the wife divorces and then he marries or he puts her away because he wants to be married to this other girl now, then she doesn't have that father figure in the home helping to raise the kids. And that's another problem too, because children who are raised without a father do not do as well as children who are raised with a father, unless they're abusive psychopaths like my steps or Kim's ex. You know, but for the most part, women that have a man in the household, they can help take care of the family and enforce rules and teach work ethic and all kinds of other things. And the children actually grow up to be healthier adults because of it. Number seven, it would diminish criminal activities between husbands and wives, and allow the husband to be the head of the family. Number eight, it would decrease suicides, murder, venereal diseases, mental illness, and sexual maladjustments. The similarities of the conditions of both India and America are evident. Removing the government from the control of marriages unless invited by the parties concerned and placing such unions back into the realm of religion would enable polygamy or monogamy to be the representative choice or the respective choice of the individuals involved and would undoubtedly improve the standards and conditions of community life. Now, we're 96% through with the reading for today. The phone lines are open if you want to call. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. If when I'm done with the reading, we don't have any callers, then I am going to end the program, which is fine with me because I still have to go to work today. So, but if anybody has questions or comments about polygamy or religion, then go ahead and give me your call now, and I will answer those questions, or I will attempt to. But at the end of the reading, I'm gonna cut out if we don't have anybody in the guest calling. So phone lines are open. The standard of morality in America is among the worst of all the nations on earth. Yet America is supposed to be a Christian nation. What has happened to the principles they say are the most wholesome of any other religion or nation? There must be something amiss if greater problems are being created here than those in the heathen nations. So when we come back on tomorrow, we'll be on page 44, and that is chapter 6, and we're going to talk about Islam and polygamy in Arabia. So we don't have anybody on the phone call, and like I said, that's fine. I'm just going to end the program. So thank you for everyone for listening to the program today. And I'll try to get this uploaded onto YouTube tonight so that it can be at that place too. So I have youtube.com/fundamentallymormon. No, wait. youtube.com/user/GodIsMyCompass. The channel name is Fundamentally Mormon. So anyway, we'll leave it at that. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Take care. God bless. And goodbye.
You have put a new...
Thank you.